Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, just the facts. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio! Season 3 finale! I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, silliness, photos of lessons you don't have to pay for, but you might ignore anyway, at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me, Jack!
Yay! That felt like a light primer strike of an opener. I got to be honest with you.
And sitting in the corner is Other John. Hi, Other John.
Hi.
Other John waved at me.
Studio guest appearance.
Well, I was just going to let him think I had finally had my schizophrenic break and was talking to myself in the corner. Thanks for ruining it, Jack. God.
Well, we haven't been running the video like we used to, so now people can't tell what we're doing anymore.
Well, and this is one of the shows where we could have run the video since we don't have a guest, but
there was a timing issue.
And I was lazy. I apologize. Hey, quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s, ARs, and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. What?
I like the twinge put on it.
Thank you. We drove through Georgia the other day, so I mean,
I believe you meant to pronounce it Georgia.
I apologize.
It's been on my mind.
It's oftentimes on my mind. God, so sorry. So, it is the season 3 finale. What does that mean for you guys? Well, it means we're giving away stuff. If you ask questions on our Facebook page, we have a SSVI tier trigger for Glocks and also a Raven Concealment Systems VG3, which works with pretty much any gun under 4.5-inch barrel length that's got an X300 on it.
Ultra.
Thank you. Would it work? I bet it would work with an X300.
The bodies are a little bit smaller on the X300 standard.
I thought the bezel was
No, the bezel's longer, but the bodies themselves are a little bit wider.
So X300 Ultra.
Ultra. But that should probably be the only light you're using, so.
Well, I mean, yeah. Sure. God. What else does that mean for you? It also means that we've got some new people that are starting with us next week. And if you've been following the internet, you might know some of them. But I'm very much looking forward to some of the new exciting things we've got going on and some other changes that will be happening, including a redesigned webpage. So,
ooh.
Shiny.
And Chrome. No, it'll really function well with Chrome.
Yeah. Witness me. Anyway, ask some questions.
Coming from Brophy John out in Arizona. With all the driving you do from different states, how do you prepare yourself for the different laws and regulations that you encounter?
So I have an app on my phone.
Do you really?
I do. I have an app for that. Like, literally, I have an app for that.
How has this never come up before? I did not know about this.
Well, it's probably because I'm usually on my phone so much that you just don't notice me referencing it. But generally, it's labeled the CCW app on my phone. I've had it for a while now. But if you look on the App Store, either Google or Android, and the unpaid endorsement, I really get a lot of use out of this. It automatically updates itself pretty much every time I just opened it up. Updates available. Do you want to update now? Yes. It's got a find current state thing. You can put in the permit states that you have. So I have an Ohio permit, New Hampshire non-resident permit, so I've got that in there. And it's got this handy-dandy map, and I will show Jack.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know, right?
I now think, I'm thinking about when we crossed a certain state line, and you dropped a little bit of information. I thought that was just some random factoid.
No, I had looked it up, and we were traveling with Melody Lauer, and I'm like, oh, by the way, your permit's not good in the state, so we need to de-gun and all that good stuff. and follow all local laws. Don't look at me that way,
Jack. Hey, you know me. Law and order every time, man.
Right. So anyway, CCW app on my phone. That's how I keep track of it. So, alrighty then.
I wasn't going to say it. Tyler Higgins wants to know how you got into the firearm industry and why did you stay?
Blind luck. I mean, like any, I was in the right place at the right time. And honestly, there are all sorts of people that could do my job probably better than I do it, but they just didn't get lucky the way I got. And I'm very grateful for, I'm not grateful that they didn't get lucky. I'm grateful that I did get lucky, if that makes sense. This is sounding really condescending, and I don't even know what that word means. No.
It means to talk down to someone.
Oh, okay. Sorry. This is a conversation we had while we were on the road. Anyway, I got really lucky. And then once I got into the industry, it's kind of an amazing job, and I shudder to think that one day I might have to go get a real job again. Hopefully never.
Horrible idea.
Yeah.
William Taylor Mock would like to know, what is the most accurate aftermarket Glock barrel?
Huh. Well, let's talk about the most accurate aftermarket Glock barrels in my experience, because that's really all I have to go off of. I have tested seriously the KKMs, the S3Fs, and the Lone Wolf barrels, as well as the Storm Lake barrels. In my experience, the S3F barrel was the most accurate out of the ones that I've tested. Now, full disclosure, I've bought a couple of those retail. They've also sent me one of those for evaluatory purposes, but that one I did receive for free. That having been said, but I've bought most of them myself, but just wanted you guys to know. That one edged out the other ones. The KKM was close. You know, so of the barrels that I've got experience with in Glocks, KKM, or the S3F, which is my preference. That having been said, unless you're doing a lot of shooting past 25 yards and really closer to 50 yards, you probably don't need to spend money on a stock, on a aftermarket Glock barrel. The stock ones for most people are going to be plenty accurate. I've not really started to notice an extreme difference until closer to the 50-yard mark. And then, you know, depending on what ammo you're using and things like that, you can really run into some consistency issues. So, if you're looking for one, S3F followed by KKM. But we got to go to break right now. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by Darkstar Gear. Whether you know the color of the boathouse at Hereford or only know the color of your mom's dark, depressing basement walls, Darkstar Gear has the solution your gear carrying needs. Check out their clip-on holster for small semi-autos and revolvers or their highly adjustable full-size AIWB holster. They even have a belt-wrap sheath for popular fixed-blade centerline knives to really tie your everyday carry together. Like that one rug I used to have before the golfer ruined it. Darn golfers. Designed, developed, and pressure-tested for real life, not 15-second Instagram videos. Find out more at darkstargear.com. So, it is the Season 3 finale, and Jack's got questions for me that you guys asked online.
We're also going to find out who shot JR tonight.
Really? Who did shoot JR? It was Maggie, right?
It was Maggie.
Did you see what I did there?
I did see what you did there. From Aaron Campbell, I'm right-handed and left-eye dominant. And
no, you're not.
It's become more of an issue as I've aged.
I know, because I'm on the internet. And you must be wrong.
Let me finish.
I'm going to let you finish.
All right, Kanye. Have to get all Swifty up in here.
Uh-oh. Start over again.
Hold on. Let me shake it off. I am right-handed and left-eye dominant. This is Aaron Campbell. It's become more of an issue as I've aged. Using a red dot and keeping both eyes open on my carbine has really helped me when shooting a rifle. On my pistol, it's getting worse. I'm not ready to switch to an RMR. Would a fiber optic sight have a similar effect, or should I just learn to shoot better left-handed? Is there any good research on cross dominance?
If you hadn't given me the Techno Viking finger there,
I
would have done it again. But Jack just pointed his finger so hard at me that, like, my parents felt it. Wow. Anyway. You're doing it again. That was two fingers. So, fiber optic, cross-eyed dominant, stuff like that. A guy you should talk to is Mike Pannone. He shoots really well, being a right-handed shooter and only having a left eye. So I'd like to, without having seen him shoot, I've seen Mike, you know what I mean. Anyway, without seeing you shoot, there are a couple of different things that you could do, either in angling the gun different or turning your head different. I know a lot of cross-dominant shooters will bury their chin into their right shoulder. Will a fiber optic help? Yes, I think so. It will certainly make the front sight more visible. Now, will it help the issue that you're having? Without seeing it in person, it's hard to say. But like I said, go ask Mike. He shoots better than I'll ever think about shooting, with some serious cross-dominance issues. Dave Savigny, another guy with pretty hardcore cross-dominance issues with his eye. Wow, we should do an out-of-context ballistic radio page and just pull quotes, kind of like out-of-context D&D.
I'm just thinking if we should pull only on-air quotes or, like, all the quotes.
Yeah. Did I answer that question? I think I answered that question.
I think we got enough of it. Enough for government work.
Okay.
Coming from Jim Sadowski, 5-shot 38 special versus 6-shot 327 fed. How much consideration does that extra round get?
Ask about the other thing he asked about too.
Oh, and 22 WMR.
How much consideration does the extra round get? Well, if I could only have one of those three options for a primary gun, it would probably be the 327 or maybe the 22. The extra round gets a lot of consideration, and also being able to fire the gun quickly and accurately gets a lot of consideration. I know I can shoot the 327 or the 22 a little bit faster. I used to be really, really tied up on caliber selection. And don't get me wrong, I still want the absolute best that I am able to give myself, and which in my case is a 9mm with duty ammo that passes the FBI and IWBA standards. That having been said, Claude Werner has done a lot of talking about, you know, the gun that you have on you versus the more effective gun that you leave at home. I'm starting to come around with that line of thinking where a hit with a less effective, and I'm doing bunny ears around that caliber, is still better than a miss with a more effective caliber. And that's a concern when I get into 5-shot J-frames. I shoot pretty well, and I still don't shoot those as great as I would like to. So whatever advantage I can give myself is certainly something that I'm looking for.
Coming from Christopher Williams, do you think lasers on handguns are a pro or a con? Do you feel like the shooter might become too reliant and actually slow down reaction times?
I think that the number one problem I see with lasers on handguns is not the laser on the handgun. It is shooters that don't understand wobble zones and start chasing the dot around on the target. So if you really look at what's happening with handguns and handgun iron sights, you are pretty much tracing a figure eight pattern in the air that, depending on what kind of shooter you are, upper body strength, et cetera, all sorts of other issues, is, you know, all over the place or not very. But either way, you've got this wobble that's occurring. The problem is you don't really notice it that much when you're just looking at your iron sights or you're aware of your iron sights. Whereas when you put a laser on paper, you suddenly are the cat chasing it around on the kitchen floor. Like, where'd that dot go? No, wait, it was there. So I see a lot of people start chasing the laser around, start waiting for the laser to be perfectly centered or perfectly still before they press the trigger. So, yeah, if you're training improperly with the laser, I think that they can be a detriment. Do I think lasers in general should be, you know, not on handgun? No, I actually really like them a lot. If I could get a grip-activated green laser that didn't change where my hand wants to be on a gun, I'd rock that all day, you know. And we've actually, we're doing some experimentation that we're not ready to talk about yet, but just sort of working on showing the problem that we're talking about and really seeing which is faster. I know, too, the Texas A&M University, and Carl Wren was the one that was running this study, did a really interesting paper on what was quicker between iron sights, red dot sights mounted on a pistol, or lasers, as far as to get a first-round hit. And if I'm remembering correctly, the laser won out there. So, you know, I like lasers on handguns a lot. I actually think they're overlooked, and the problem, too, is that a lot of people start putting them on things without knowing why they're doing it or really understanding how to train with one, and then, you know, people look at that and go, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this. So, like anything else, proper practice.
From John C. McGuire, you've mentioned that you prefer number one buck over double aught buck. Why?
The main reason, and I will talk about, there's two different schools of thought here. Steve Fisher, who I talk to a lot about shotguns and have really learned a lot about shotguns from, is of the opinion that whatever your longest shot inside of your house is, you should, or your longest expected shot, which in an average house is somewhere between 7 to 12 yards, depending on how your house is laid out, blah, 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 blah. That at your longest range, you should have a spread of somewhere between 3 to 6 inches. That's Steve's school of thought, and the way he explains it, I agree with him. My opinion's different, though, because I have a different requirement for what I use a shotgun for. I like the number one. Let me back up. I like to have as tight of a pattern as I can possibly get for the maximum amount of distance. I want to be able to be precise at closer ranges and be able to extend the range of the shotgun because I have some pretty long shots. From my office window to my mailbox at the end of my driveway, which realistically is about the longest shot that I can think of taking in self-defense around my property, or at least out of around my home, like I said, 50 yards. So if I have a shotgun, I want to be able to extend the range as much as possible. The number one is a denser pattern that's going to have more pellets on target at that range than something like an 8-pellet double-aught buck will. So that's why I selected it, is because it is a longer range, in my experience, buckshot. You know, it's also a denser pattern at closer ranges. You get better pattern overlay. It's really, really impressive when you test it in gel, even more so than the double-aught, and double-aught's pretty darn impressive. So that's kind of why I've gone towards that. Now, the problem becomes that it's hard to find, which, you know, if you can't find it, sticking with the Federal Flight Control double-aught, either the 8 or 9 pellet, it's fine. I mean, they all work really well. And a lot of it's going to be, too, what your gun likes and what your gun patterns well. So, but personally, for what I use a shotgun for, could foresee myself using a shotgun for, the number one makes more sense.
Coming from Andrew Keith, if you only had time to shoot one pistol drill, which one?
Depends on what I'm trying to work on now, doesn't it? If I'm trying to, like, get an all-inclusive drill that's working on, like, precision, maybe handling and also speed, the fast drill is a really good diagnostic tool, you know, to draw to a relatively tight target with the 3x5 head box, have to place two rounds on that. then perform a slide lock reload and speed up and try and get speed with 4, 2, and 8-inch circle. That's not a bad drill. If I'm working pure, if I'm working pure accuracy or something like that, then maybe I want to just do 25-yard bullseye. It really depends on what you're looking at and what you're trying to work on. I think a lot of people would be really well served to look at dot torture, starting at like 2 or 3 yards. And wow, that's really close. No, trust me. Start at 2 or 3 yards. That's a good place to sort of gauge where you're at. And is it more round intensive drill if you're really looking for one drill to run once or twice versus one drill to run a whole mess of times. So, and then some other times I'll modify drills. It really depends. I know that's a much more generalized answer than he was probably looking for, but really what you need to do is identify what you're trying to work on and then tailor the drill to work on what you're trying to work on and not just stick with one certain kind of drill. Anyway, more when we get back. Right now you're listening to Blitzer Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms parts and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself or a first-time gun buyer or competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So, I gotta say, Jack, watching you do what you're doing to the dead cat, and I can hear it too, by the way, just like your mustachioed face, like just rubbing against the air deadener in front of your microphone.
Worth it.
It's okay. It is the season 3 finale of Ballistic Radio, which is amazing to me, too. But we are answering your questions to get you entered to win a really cool prize pack from SSVI and Raven Concealment Systems. And I think we got more questions, I hope.
Yes, we do. Coming from Kent,
Tamrakeel, right?
Come on down. How much emphasis?
She's coming to my birthday party.
Is she?
Yeah, I know. I'm super stoked.
That's going to be awesome.
Yes.
How much emphasis should people put on weak hand only shooting? And will the world end if I call my other strong hand weak? Personally, I think my left hand is a strong independent hand that doesn't need no right hand.
Do I get to Jamie Lannister you to find out? Ooh.
On a scale of Luke Skywalker to Jamie Lannister.
No. So how much weak hand shooting should you practice? And should we call it our weak hand? I don't know. Call it whatever you want. Non-dominant hand, other strong hand, whatever else came up in that thread on pistol forum so many years ago. And wow, that's been a while too. Anyway, how much of that should you be doing? Probably more than you are currently. Unless you're practicing a lot, in which case, good job. I was at Polypalooza 2 years ago, and one of the things that we do at Polypalooza during lunch break on day one is like a friendly competition for charity between anyone who wants to enter, where you are shooting 15 targets. One of them is a quarter inch in size all the way up to a 4-inch circle. You're doing that at like 3 yards. But you start off weak hand only. If you miss a shot, you get to go to weak hand freestyle, so two hands on the gun, then strong hand only, and finally you can finish up freestyle. I tried like 3 different times and absolutely was terrible at it. And I remember Claude Werner making fun of me as he's watching this go on. And I'll tell you, you've never really lived until you've had Claude Werner telling you how stupid you are at something that you're not doing well.
It's an enlightening moment.
It's a really, really strong experience. I might be misremembering the order of when the dressing down occurred from Claude, but I know it happened. And ever since then, I worked on it a lot more, and last year came in second out of the shooters that participated in that because I had spent a lot more time on it. Now, realistically, how important is it? Well, that's a really good question. You know, I know that it has happened multiple times where someone's taken rounds to the hand and had to transition to their other strong hand, non-dominant hand, whatever you want to call it. Does that happen often? No. Does it happen? Yes. If you find yourself in that situation, is that something you maybe want to have practiced beforehand? Probably so. The other thing, and Melody Lauer and I discussed this a little bit, if you're going to practice weak-hand-only shooting, you should probably practice accessing the gun weak-handed in a realistic way, which probably means picking it up off of something. I've been several places where they have done ground starts with guns and had you start with the weak hand, and it is funny to watch people try and figure out how to pick the gun up with their weak hand if it's not oriented, if the gun's not oriented a way that they, you know, it's just they've not thought about it, and there's this moment of huh, and I know it sounds really, really stupid. I realize that, but I've seen it happen, and it's almost universal. Every time that I've seen ground starts done with a weak hand, there's at least 30 to 40% of the shooters have like this hard reset where they're like, how do I do this? So if you're going to practice that, practice picking the gun up with your left hand too, or right hand, depending.
Whatever your strong hand is not. Coming from Guy Wolford, why do guys always include a picture of their watch when showing off their everyday carry? And you said there's some sort of historical context to this.
Well, so recently, and somebody answered this on the thread, and they weren't wrong. Colleen Noir has started a thing, a hashtag on Instagram and Twitter and everything called Steel Waiting, where he'll take a photo of a firearm with a watch, still waiting for it to get up on its own and cause problems. They don't do that. Now, I think a better question is, why do we consider the watch to be part of our everyday carry? And historically, what purpose did that serve? Well, one of the things that you could always, you know, here, James Bond, for instance, and even current day special forces dudes, they always have really nice watches. Now, part of that is a status symbol, yes. But the historical context behind that is before phones and other digital timekeeping devices that automatically synced up with the atomic clock or whatever that you could synchronize easily, it really, really mattered that you had a timepiece that was true and ran accurately, because everybody would synchronize their watches. And when you are trying to get down to the minute or second when your team of guys is going to approach and attack a target from multiple different angles, it mattered that you had a watch that wasn't going to run fast or slow. So the historical context behind the fascination with watches, there you have it. So does that make sense?
Yeah. I saw a pretty cool watch this weekend I'm thinking about getting. So I think it's time for my first, like, serious watch.
What watch?
It was a Luminox. You saw it.
Who had it?
Thomas.
Oh. Oh. Anyway, moving on. It's just
from Tim Goodman. How often should you swap out /fire your carry or defensive ammo?
This is you getting even for earlier, isn't it?
A little bit.
Okay.
Subtle, ain't it?
Not very. We're talking about it on air. How often should you switch out or fire your defensive carry ammo? Funny you bring that up. You know, so before the show, I posted a photo, and I really regret not posting the photo after I put it in the other two guns I tried it in, of a Federal HST that had been hit And didn't go off. It's a dead primer. Tried it in two other guns also. Didn't go off in them either. A lot of people came up with a lot of interesting things about why that may have happened or may not have happened. You know, and some of them were maybe reasons why if it hadn't happened in three different guns. If you put a round in three different guns and it doesn't go off, the primer is dead. Here's the funny thing about that. I loaded that round out of a fresh box of ammunition on Thursday, chambered it on Thursday, have not unchambered that round since then. So from Thursday to today, when I shot that round, it was riding around in my carry gun waiting to not go off, which is now time number three where I've had guns that would not function right out of the holster one way or another, where I would have either gotten only one round off or none in this case. So how important is it to rotate your carry ammo? In this case, it wouldn't have mattered at all. Now, if you're rechambering the same round over and over again, you certainly want to pay attention to that because bullet setback is a thing that can happen. Also, too, depending on the design of the firearm, it can knock the priming compound off of the primer, make it so that the gun's not the round will not fire, period. It's really common in AR pattern rifles. Dr. Gary Roberts did a really good write-up on that. That is all over the web if you look for Doc GKR and check out Pistol Forum or Primary and Secondary or any of the other places that things are located at. So anyway, Jack's like...
I just figured out that name.
You just now figured out Doc GKR?
The thing is, I read like two different things from him and I never figured out it was the same guy.
Wow. It's okay. I've had moments like that, too, where it's like I realize I'm talking to someone a lot more important than I originally thought. And I'm like, oh, anyway, hey, you're listening to Ballistic Radio, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio! And no, the show's not over. They keep playing this bumper music coming in sometimes when they're not supposed to. But it's not the producer's fault because, yeah, anyway... This segment brought to you by TaxTrack Steel Target Systems, makers of the quarter scale steel target and the arch frame target stand, which are literally the best steel targets and target stands I've ever used. Hit their steel targets with more than 70,000 rounds of rifle, pistol, and shotgun ammunition without a single problem. For more information, visit them at TaxTrack.com. Hi.
Coming from Hiram Grissom.
Wait. It's a season three finale. And that was Jack's forehead impacting the microphone. Remember the first time you were on the show and you punched the microphone?
I still hear about that today. People
it was like God knocking. Boom.
People who have never listened to another episode always like, oh, man, I remember that time you punched the mic.
Why are they still friends of yours if they've never listened to another episode, Jack? No more wire hangers!
Anyway.
No?
Oh, man. That's rough. What do they win tonight if we read their question off?
An SSVI. Glock tier trigger. Or tier Glock. Anyway, whatever the order is of that. Or a Raven Concealment. And a Raven Concealment Systems VG3.
That's an awesome prize package.
It is.
Hiram Grishin wants to know, with so much training going on nationally, and such a strong concentration of trainers in the Midwest, can you discuss how you find trainers in different regions or ways to pick out when you're going to train with someone?
I can. Did we answer two of Hiram's questions now, this show, or am I making that up?
I think you're making that up.
Wow, I make things up a lot.
He does ask a lot of questions, and they're often well thought out.
Well, I will say that if we answered two of his questions tonight, I can almost guarantee that his chances of winning are improved. 100%.
I'll have to check the math on that.
50%.
It's 100%.
25%.
He will have had double the entries.
Oh. Anyway, how do you find instructors in the Midwest?
No, he's saying...
Because I forgot what the question was. So the best way to find instructors in the Midwest... What, Jack?
I think we can just say all over this great nation.
Well, I want to talk about the Midwest.
Okay, then let's talk about the Midwest.
So when I'm down in the South... What I really like to do is sort of figure out whatever region that I'm going to be in and see if there's any well-known instructors that are from that region. You know, for instance, a lot of really, really talented instructors down in Florida. I can figure out who they are. If certain instructors are known for being in Virginia or wherever, I generally have a list of instructors that I like to follow, and I sort of know where they're going to be at. Now, if I'm looking for regional instructors or I'm trying to pick up on something like that, checking some of the more popular forums and seeing if anyone in particular is mentioned, really good way to do that, you know. And then also, too, you can look at some of the schools and see, you know, what's around there. For instance, Rangemaster used to be down in Memphis. Now they're doing a traveling thing. You know, you've got John Murphy out in Virginia, whose class I still really want to get to. I keep hearing great things about that. You know, I know Ernest Langdon just moved out to the Southwest somewhere or other. But these are things that I have sort of gleaned from hanging out on the places online where they talk about stuff like that. So really, I would look for some of the good information resources like Pistol Forum, Primary and Secondary, you know, Total Protective Interactive, TPI, places like that, and see who's talking about what, where those instructors are going to be at, and things like that. The other thing that you can do, too, a lot of the guests that I have on the show are people that you should really try and spend money with. So if you go back through our past guests and there's a particular one that speaks to you or the situation that you find yourself in on a day-to-day basis, then figure out where they're going to be at and make arrangements. Most everybody these days is doing a traveling thing. Very few of the nationally known instructors are just staying in one spot. So, did I answer his question?
Mm-hmm. I think that was a good way to answer that.
Okay, because I didn't actually hear what his question was.
From
California.
California?
Why not?
California?
That's where happy cows come from.
Mm, and the happy cows give the best cheese.
Anyway. Season 3 finale!
Woo! We'll do better next time, we promise. Coming from Eric Tomingelo, how do we counter derp in the firearms training community?
I had to lean over to see how that guy's last name was spelled.
I think I got as close as I could.
Probably. How do we counter derp in the firearms training community? I don't know. The way I have chosen to do it is not necessarily the way it should be done. It's just my best attempt at it. I think that we should really do our very best to educate ourselves as much as we can. I think that we should have a historical understanding of why people do certain things or why we did certain things but don't do them anymore. I think the number one thing that we should do is engage people in ways that allows for actual education to occur. When I first started doing this, I was very, very aggressive and very quick to write people off and be like, oh, that guy's an idiot. I don't want to talk to him. In retrospect, and what I try to do now is engage with someone as long as I can, you know, explain why certain things are done certain ways and try and have a conversation with them. You know, sometimes we're not even talking about the same thing when we're arguing. I just recently had that where Andy, one of the guys that used to be on the show all the time, tagged me in something, and I got into it with a guy on there. Well, we both got annoyed at each other. The conversation was not very professional at that point. And, you know, then we private messaged each other. And the thing we were arguing about, we weren't even talking about the same thing. And long story short, now we, you know, have had several really good discussions. You know, a case where had I just stuck to the "that guy's an idiot," wouldn't have been very productive. So educating ourselves, trying to educate other people without being personal about it, without attacking someone's character, pretty important. And I honestly think, too, that we need to, you know, engage more of the experts, which I am not one of by any stretch, to talk to people about these things. You know, the problem is that a lot of the really, really knowledgeable men and women don't spend any time talking with people online or whatever because it gets really frustrating. So that's what I got.
This one's a very personal question. From Yorkus Rex, do you prefer precision-edged dice like those made by Zochi or rounded polished dice like those made by Chessex or Kaplow? I'm a Chessex man. Like, born and raised, that's what I've been, that's what I'll always be.
Well, I've had both sets of dice kill my characters before, so I can't say that I play favorites. And for those that don't know, we're talking about nerd stuff. D&D, to be particular. Pathfinder, to be even more specific. But anyway. Next question. Oh, you didn't have one ready to go. I win!
I thought you'd drag that one out more.
I didn't want to spend the last minute of Season 3 talking about Dungeons & Dragons. Though it seems we are doing that either way now. Jack was doing so well.
I had gotten the timing down really well for this show.
Almost.
So close. Brian Sheets, what is the most overlooked piece of gear not carried by the everyday carrier?
Tourniquet or medical kit. And we're going to talk about this next week a little bit, but there was recently a tragedy where three police officers were shot, one was killed. And listening to the audio of that is absolutely heartbreaking because there was not a single trauma kit on scene. And you hear them calling over the radio multiple times for a car to bring a trauma kit. So as much as I like having the latest, greatest Blast-O-Matic 9000 on my hip or shoved down the front of my pants and, you know, as much as I like having a light that will melt someone's face off, you know, or a fixed blade knife or a reload, medical kit, training, you know, tourniquets are a big deal. That would be my number one suggestion for things that people overlook because it's not sexy and it's not cool to think about getting shot. And it's not cool to think about someone you care about laying on the ground bleeding to death in front of you. But it's probably a good thing to think about beforehand rather than after. So you got one more, Jack?
Do you have any, this is Fee Faller, do you have any suggestions for shoot, no shoot drills or exercises?
Force on force is probably the best option there is for that. Properly set up force on force exercise to really throw some ambiguity in there. Range drill that I like is if you've got like a dot torture target and have like a training partner that can call out a number to shoot at or not shoot at based off of some external stimuli. I mean, there's all sorts of ways to do it, but it is certainly something to think about. Even drawing and presenting a firearm but not firing and then issuing verbal commands. Just getting yourself in the habit to where you're not always pulling the trigger as soon as you hit extension. So, anyway.
From Timothy Vona, do you have any recommendation for iPro for those that wear glasses?
I've had a lot of luck with Rudy Project, and I know they've got inserts that you can throw in there. You know, most of the quality manufacturers that are going to have stuff like that, but I prefer Rudy Project right now, that or Oakley. So the M frames are pretty good at that. Anyway, I think we're about at the end of the show. I just want to take a minute. Guys, thank you so much for listening each week. I really, really love my job, and I really love that you guys listen and let us do this. I cannot tell you how grateful I am for, you know, putting us on the air for the last 3 years, how excited I am for the next season. Got some really big things coming, some really good things coming, but couldn't do any of it without your guys' help and continued support and interest. And just know that Jack and I are really, really grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all you got? Mm-hmm.
Well, you spoke so eloquently, I'm left. You know, typically I'm the bard in these situations, but
you're speechless? Oh, okay. Make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week for season 4.